This Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Morton Marcus is a noted Indiana economist, writer, and speaker here, and is with us as well on occasion to talk about his Eye on the Pie columns that are out across the Hoosier State. And he's with us to talk about some of the issues that are important to Hoosiers these days, and most of them have to deal with money. And Morton, thank you for being with us on the program today. Maybe the question I should ask is, your latest column is entitled "Where's the Money Going?" And I know that's about money that Hoosiers are expecting to see coming from the federal government and the COVID relief funds.
It's a vast amount of money. Mm-hmm. Not only are we having $1,400 for each person in the household, but the state itself is getting $3 billion. $3 billion, that's a big number. And then if you add in the cities and towns and the counties, there's another $2 billion. So in total, the state actually is getting close to $9 billion coming in here. And the question is, who's going to decide how it's spent? That's really a very big issue, and we're not hearing much about it. They may be talking about it privately, the members of the government, but they're certainly not holding any public hearings. I'm sure there are some federal government restrictions on how the money can be spent. For instance, cities and towns which have pension funds which have never been fully funded. That is, there isn't enough money there to pay the obligations they have to people who are retired and are going to be retired in the future. None of this federal funds can be used for the purpose of funding pensions because it wouldn't be spent fast enough. And I can understand that. That's a reasonable thing. They want the money spent, and they want the money spent as fast as possible. It's the same way with the $1,400 that we're getting per person. The federal government really wants to see you spend it. Well, if you put it in the bank, that means somebody else can spend it, and that's good. And you can then spend it later, but the banks in the meantime can lend it out while you're not using it. This idea that giving money to people who are fairly wealthy. I have a lot of friends who are retired and they've got good pensions, and they say, I don't need the money. Why don't they give the money to poor people? Well, it's very hard sometimes to determine who's poor or who's really suffering from the COVID situation. I have other friends who are not wealthy, but they're comfortable. They live on Social Security. They live on some savings. They're not suffering because of COVID. So what happens is that they will spend their money that they get, and I will spend the money that I get, and you'll spend the money that you get, and that will help everybody. And the idea is to get the economy moving. And that's really what this money's all about. Mm-hmm. It's not just aid to those who are suffering, but it's to move the economy. It's to get to a situation where people can get back to work. And then I hear others saying, "Well, look, get them back to work." I know people who could go back to work but won't. There are restaurant owners who can't attract the help back to work because they don't pay enough. And I actually asked one of them the other day, well, have you thought of raising the wages for this person? Oh, no, I couldn't do that. It would be too hard on me. Well, what's hard on you? Is it not having enough staff or paying the staff that you have more so that that you can help more people and feed more people? These are tough decisions that a lot of people have to make, and some of it is just ludicrous. One woman was telling me that her son was just lying around the home because he's got enough money for being unemployed that he's very comfortable, and she'd like to get him out of the house. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't want to go to work because he's got enough money for being unemployed. His son, by the way, is in his late 20s. What he's doing living with mother is a psychological issue. I can't deal with that. But we have this situation where we're depending on people to go out and spend money and get the economy back where it was, because that's the real difficulty that so many people are having. And I think that the money that the state is going to get, the money that the individual places, for example, if we look at the counties in Indiana, and I look here at Lake County. Lake County government is going to get $94 million. Mm-hmm. I'm looking now at Hammond. Let's see what Hammond's going to get. Well, DeMott is going to get $900,000 to the town of DeMott. That can do an awful lot of street paving. That can do an awful lot of rehabilitating buildings. There are so many different ways that money could be spent. The town of, not the town, the city of, let me get there. I'll get there. I'm embarrassed at how I am. And
how about the
whole Gary metropolitan area is getting $84 million. That's pretty good. Well, that's Gary. That's just Gary.
Yeah.
Hammond is getting $53 million. Michigan City is getting $18 million. Mishawaka over there by South Bend is getting $12 million. I mean, this is just an awful lot of money. East Chicago is getting $33 million. These are real serious sums of money. This is nothing trivial. And you have to wonder, how are they going to spend it? And the East Chicago City Council has $33 million more to spend. Is there any public discussion? Where should that money go? The decision is going to be made by the City Council. But what kind of public input is there going to be for that? And now is the time that it ought to be discussed. They may not have the money in their bank account, in the city's account yet, but now is the time it should be discussed, and I'll bet it is not on the agenda.
How about communities like Valparaiso, for example, or Portage, you know, in Porter County?
Well, let me see if I can find Valparaiso. Not every town is listed on this list I have, so I'll get over here and see what we've got. Portage is getting nearly $8 million. For Portage, and we'll find out about Valpo in a minute if it's listed. Now that requires that I really understand the alphabet. You're putting me under real stress today. Another $7 million for Valpo. And it just goes on. Place after place that is getting vast sums of money. Some of these places are really tiny. That are on this list. Wanata. Now, you probably know where Wanata is. If you go out Highway 30 East, it's over where 421 and 30 meet. Wanata is getting the wonderful sum of $200,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, then you have also not only dealing with the localities that are getting their share of the federal funds, but then, of course, the General Assembly is still at work trying to deal with the two-year state budget on top of that, I imagine, and that's another question.
The General Assembly always fights over toothpicks. There are serious things to be concerned about in Indiana, and the General Assembly is a mess. I've gotten embarrassed even talking about them. Mm-hmm. There are really nice people in the General Assembly, serious people. But when they get together, they act like a bunch of junior high school kids. What they do is absolutely awful and does not necessarily meet the needs of the people of this state. One of the things they fight over is teacher salaries.
Right.
And I can understand that. Teachers are not well paid in Indiana at all. At the same time, what is it that schools need? Do we really need teachers to be paid better, or do we need better teachers? Or do we just need more teachers? That's another possibility. And I haven't seen any answers to those questions. There are a lot of very good teachers, but there are an awful lot of very, very bad teachers also. And there are teachers who are teaching things they don't really know and understand, and they have to go home and read the book the night before the students get to class to talk about it. These are difficult issues that we're just not facing. And a large part of that comes from the school board itself. You can't just blame the General Assembly. The school board is not necessarily a responsible group of people. I have sat through many school board meetings, which are terrible. The members of the school board are ignorant about what goes on in the schools. I remember sitting through one school board meeting in a suburban community, where the big fight was over mats for the wrestling team. Now, is that really the heart of education in that town? Is what kind of mats are they going to get for the wrestling team? These are the kinds of issues. And a lot of what they do is so automatic. You know, they vote every single time on the pay for the teachers. Yes, we approve the paychecks that are going out this week. Now, the paychecks that are going out this week are the same ones that went out 2 weeks ago, but we have to take a vote on it. These are procedural matters that they get tied up with, and that may be state regulation, which is again, stultifying. It just makes it so difficult for people to be on the school board. We used to have a situation where we wanted the most, the most qualified people on the school board. And we don't get that any longer. We get people who are perhaps intensely interested in good education, but have no idea what it is. There are a lot of people who, if I were on the school board, it'd be a great mistake. Because I don't know what should be going on in a fourth grade class. And I don't know what my 12-year-old grandson should be learning at this point. I don't belong on the school board. And so many people will get on the school board because they want good education for our children. And what happens is they then vote for a new gymnasium. Because a new gymnasium, well, that would be nice. I know some high schools that are building new athletic facilities so they can attract students from other districts to come and play basketball or play football or tennis for that high school instead of the next high school over. There is actual competition among high schools for athletes, and the money goes into that. And they say, well, team sports build character. Yes, team sports build character, but what are we doing to build the knowledge of our students? And you can have teams that are not athletic that can build character also. There's a vulgarity to what goes on with education that I find very distressful. I don't mean to be in such a nasty mood today, but you've been asking me questions about money, and money can make people angry.
Well, that's certainly true, and it's certainly the truth. It's also not only that; it's also the fodder for some future Eye on the Pie columns too. And we'll be back with you to check on some of those too. And Morton, as always, we thank you for spending time with us today to give us your views and some of the thoughts that you've already put out there. That's available in print around the Hoosier State, but you've shared with us here and spared a little time to go over some of these issues that have given you quite a bit of concern. And we hope to have you back again soon to talk about them and the new ones coming up as well, too.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
We'll talk with you again soon, Morton. Marcus is a retired IU economist, but he's still out there in circulation as a writer and a speaker here in the Hoosier State. And you're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Foster Success, which is based out of Indianapolis, is launching a new college readiness program here in Northwest Indiana. They've also created a position to oversee it. Let's find out more about all of this. We have with us the president and CEO of Foster Success, Dr. Mackie Stevens, and her new staff members, Tiffany Powell. And thank you both, ladies, for being with us on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Dr. Stevens, I'll let you start out. Talk a little bit about the program in particular, the need for such of a college readiness program here in Lake County.
Sure. So Foster Success, you know, as you mentioned, we're based in Indianapolis, but we're working across the state with older foster youth. And so these are teenagers and young adults who are transitioning out of foster care. And what we have seen over time is that only 3% of individuals who age out of foster care and go on to college earn a degree by the age of 25. And we know that one of the barriers is having the right support in place for them. And that actually starts before they step foot on college campuses. And so we are really excited about Tiffany's work and launching this program up there in Northwest Indiana to start working with high school students in their junior and senior year to help prepare them for success when they go off to college by, you know, providing some mentoring and support. And Tiffany can definitely get into the nuts and bolts of the programs a little bit more. But yes, we know that the work has to start in high school.
Well, please, Tiffany, tell us a little bit more about your job and about how you're going to fit in with this this program that's underway.
A little bit more about my position. I'm actually the Assistant Director of Outreach and Engagement, and in relation to this particular program in Northwest Indiana, it's called Fostering Higher Education. And like Maggie said, working with high school youth that are desiring to attend post-secondary education. And so we're specifically looking for those students that are juniors and seniors in high school, but not just those students. We're also open and want to work with individuals that are currently working on their GED or have already completed their GED, but have not started college their college education as of yet. So we can work with them, helping them to transition into college, as well as those high school students that need a little bit more assistance transitioning into college.
What seemed to make Lake County a better place to start the program than perhaps any other county in the state, for that matter?
So as you know, we're based in Marion County, so we do a lot of outreach in Marion County, but we wanted to broaden our scope, and this particular program sounded like a good fit for Lake County,
mm-hmm.
Not only from a diversity standpoint, an ethnic diversity standpoint, but just from a educational background standpoint, the diversity amongst the different students in the different high schools within Lake County. So we just thought that Lake County would be that excellent start to start branching out more across the state.
Now, I know that Foster Success mainly focuses on young people who are in foster care or coming out of foster care. In particular, in this case, they may be high school graduates or about to graduate, and they're about to become adults and be off on their own in many respects. Is this a good way to help get them off on a good start, a better start maybe than otherwise?
Absolutely. From an educational standpoint, you know, students that have that aspiration of going on to college, you know, a lot of times as youth, you just don't know which way to go and which way to individuals are out there and what resources are out there. So this program is designed, and my position is designed, to help gear them in the right direction, connect them with the right resources so that they can not only transition to become a college student, but also a viable young adult that's contributing to society, contributing to their college campuses. So it's more than just transitioning to college, but also transitioning into adulthood.
Now, since this is a new program, have you had an opportunity, or are you going to be taking advantage of the opportunity very soon to meet with officials from the high schools around Lake County to talk about the program, to get them interested and get them to participate?
Yes, that is forthcoming. You know, with COVID's kind of put a damper on some things, but
mm-hmm.
we have had the opportunity to talk to not only DCS in Lake County, but some of the agencies within the county, but as far as outreach to the different high schools and the counselors and administrators to get provide them with a better understanding of what we're doing, that is forthcoming.
Now, do you both feel that this is a program that might be able to be expanded to other nearby counties like Porter County or LaPorte County and take advantage of the high schools in those areas to help get this program going?
I think that that's definitely something we're keeping on our eye on and looking at, you know, how we're able to get this going in Lake County and then really gauge demand and interest as more and more people learn about the program for expansion, you know, not only to neighboring counties in Northwest Indiana, but even potentially other parts of the state if there's interest and support for it.
Dr. Stevens, let me, if I may, ask you about another program that Foster Success has underway and has received some important funding support, in this case from the Lilly Endowment. It's a grant that you're going to be able to launch a new workforce engagement program. Will you tell us a little bit about that and what kind of impact it might have here in Northwest Indiana?
Thanks for asking about it. We're really excited. So we have for a while been doing quite a bit of work with our students who go to college and providing support for them once they're on campus. You know, Tiffany kind of gets them to college. We have another team who's supporting them when they're on campus. What this new funding from the Lilly Endowment will allow us to do is to build similar supports and pathways for students who choose not to go to college right away, or who might start college and decide it's not for them. This specific funding from the Lilly Endowment is focused on Central Indiana, but we're really hoping that as we build models and programs in Central Indiana, that we will be able to replicate efforts again and expand those to other parts in the state, potentially Northwest Indiana as well. But we just want to make sure that as individuals are aging out of foster care, they have as many opportunities, supported opportunities as possible to help them explore the appropriate education and workforce pathways for them and their personal goals.
Well, that's good to hear, because we know that the state government, of course, wants to make sure that there's plenty of workplace opportunities for every Hoosier, regardless of how they finish their high schooling or their post-high school years, and be sure that they're ready for the jobs that will come in the future. We've been talking with the Assistant Director of Outreach and Engagement, Tiffany Powell, and with Foster Success President and CEO, Dr. Maggie Stevens, about the new college readiness program in Lake County, which is entitled the Fostering Higher Education Program. Ladies, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you for having us.
It's been a year of learning and living through the COVID-19 pandemic here in Indiana. Through it all, many frontline workers had confronted some personal fears to make schools and businesses running and make them safe to be in. Melissa Rose from Valparaiso was one of them. She worked as both a bus driver and a personal shopper for the grocery delivery app Instacart. And Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks talked with Melissa recently.
My day usually starts very early. I'm up at 4 a.m. and I'm out of the house by 6 every morning. Get on my school bus. Sometimes that drive to school, especially in the wintertime, can be tricky at best. When we did go back to school in August, I was petrified. I'm expected to go be locked in a box with 40 kids. Crazy, right? But knock wood, it has been okay for me so far. But the anxiety, oh boy, oh boy. Of course, I try and make a point of always having a smile, although now it's masked. But there's a smile in my voice. Good morning. Oh, I love your new hair. Oh, I love your coat. Whatever it is. That little bit of time that I get to be a bright spot totally can change my whole day too. Sounds bad no matter how I say it, but you know, I used to love to see my kids every day. After summer break, I'd be like, yeah, I get to see, you know. But now I'm kind of scared of the kids. I'm anxious around them. I'm afraid of getting sick. That's it. I'm afraid of getting sick. On a typical day, I'm off the bus at 9 a.m. and I usually try and do at least 3, maybe 4 hours of Instacarting.
Morning.
People don't understand a lot about how the gig economy works. It's just somebody on the other end of an app and my food shows up. That's just not the case. You know, a lot of work goes into it. We're kind of like the unsung hero. I remember, you know, everybody was, oh, grocery store workers, they're right there at the front line. And meanwhile, Instacart shoppers were just furiously combing the aisles in the background, getting it done. But I would never want to take away from cashiers and stockers and everybody else. We're all in it together. They have hired thousands and thousands and thousands of new shoppers. Completely out of control hiring. If you sign somebody on and they do a certain amount of batches, They're going to pay you $725. People go nuts for that. But every time you sign up another shopper, you're throwing another piranha in the tank. There's somebody else now that you have to fight against to get what few orders there are. It's taken everything away from the old shoppers, and it's hard now to earn. It really is. It's hard to earn money now. I am optimistic. I have to be optimistic. Pessimism and I don't get along real well. You know, we've had a bad turn. My husband recently lost his job of many, many years on top of everything else. But I've also learned to look at the bright side, which I never used to really do. I used to just, if it was bad, it was all going to be bad until it wasn't. And I hope it sticks around. I hope I stay this person. I hope I can remain the person that can roll with the punches. I'm going to be okay at home with my husband, being quiet, being still. We're going to make it. Somehow, we're going to make it through this.
Now we go from bus drivers to teachers. And with the youngsters out of the classrooms, teachers had to rethink everything they knew about their profession and grapple with questions that they had never considered. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay spoke with Jenny Veach, who is a Western Indiana High School science teacher, to learn how the pandemic changed her work and what she has taken away from a year of COVID-19.
My name is Jenny Veach, and I teach at Crawfordsville High School in Crawfordsville, Indiana. So I've been in education for 25 years, a public school teacher, and I can remember specifically a year ago from today, just like with 9/11, we were all a little worried, but not panicked. We really thought that we would have the week before spring break off, and then the following week was our spring break, and that we would come back after spring break. You know, you're a little worried and you kind of heard of this thing, but there wasn't the panic. But I do remember leading up to that and all of the emails. You just kept checking your computer to see what the administration was saying. I would say that that first week of April after spring break, things really started to get serious. I'm on it's called the school leadership team, which is a very small committee that really works directly with our administration. We started talking about long-term. What are we going to do with kids that don't have access to Wi-Fi at home? Like this, these were those things that the committee started to kind of talk about that first week of April, that we need to be ready to be in for the long haul. And that's when it hit home. We had to figure out a way for this to work for the students and to give the staff the tools they needed. I mean, we went home with, you know, our Chromebook, and that's probably about it. We didn't have cameras at that point, like adjustable, portable cameras, microphones. Some of the obstacles, you know, we had to overcome was, is it okay to do a Google Meet? Can a Zoom meeting handle all these kids? Liabilities. It was challenging. And then the other aspect of that is getting a hold of the students and getting them to buy in on this. There are some that never, ever showed up again. I emailed, I called, I did everything I possibly could, but that they were gone. Trying to tackle what fall was going to look like. We thought at least every other day to be able to see them, hold them accountable was important. We went to the hybrid model. After fall break, which would have been about mid-October, we came back full force. As I sit and stare at dissection materials in front of me, because I do teach science, it's the first really wet or hands-on lab that we're going to do in the last year. It's kind of sad to think that we've gone a whole year and there's been so little interaction. And I think that's what I miss most at the school, when they're masked up, sitting in straight kind of, you know, sterile rows. They aren't as apt. They don't talk. They don't interact. I generally will let them work with partners on things, and we're not doing that or allowed to this year. And then I feel like also losing the camaraderie with my fellow teachers. We don't have a lot of staff meetings. We try to stay separate. And I feel like that's a big loss. Thinking about things that I've gained, of course, technology and my ability to navigate, to use, to find alternatives. Once you've done things for so long, you kind of get in a rut. And I think maybe this was kind of one of those, hey, you can do things differently. A lot of these activities I'm coming up with, I absolutely will disperse and use as hopefully we get back to what is a more normal in the next couple of years. You know, as I look forward, you know, looking into even the fall when the next year starts or even a year from now, just getting back to normalcy, being able to work in groups, you know, have that interaction. I miss that desperately with the kids. Oh, and the extracurriculars. I miss that. Can be sports to plays to the choir concert to homecoming, prom, just that traditional high school experience that they just aren't getting to have, and it breaks my heart. So that's my biggest hope by, you know, next year.
That's high school science teacher Jenny Veach. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you'll be with us tomorrow.